Thomas, thank you for joining us. Now, 50% of the population now lives in urban areas, and by 2050, the pace is expected to accelerate. What is the impact of urbanization and smart cities on the environment, especially in Southeast Asia, Thomas?
Thank you for the question, Rizal. Indeed, what we're witnessing today is really a macro trend worldwide. By 2050, as you mentioned, two-thirds of the world population will live in cities. And that itself will pose a big stress on our energy system. It will drive a rise of energy consumption quite steeply. If you look at Southeast Asia in particular, it is expected that this trend will also create a big surge for the demand in terms of cooling needs. And that as well will disrupt a lot of our energy needs. In fact, if we continue to do business as usual, it is likely that we won't be able to stay on track with a 2-degree scenario, which would allow us to keep the climate change effect under control. So quite a lot of challenges ahead. That goes as well having a bigger number of people in cities to deal with increased flow of people, increased traffic, And you can imagine the number of challenges growing exponentially as everybody basically live in a dense urban area.
Sorry, Thomas, to cut you there, but are we having this problem because of the legacy issues of building design, of town planning? How do we come to this point?
Yeah, so obviously the cities of yesterday were not planned to cope with this increase of population and with this this new density. So it's only normal that we need to go through an adjustment phase. But there are clear way forward for the cities of tomorrow. I don't want to paint too much of a gloomy scenario, if you wish. And there are concrete things you can do at design stage to allow new districts, new urban spaces, to be more circular, to make less use of resources. I think, for example, about district cooling. It's a solution that we are deploying at scale right now within the region. It consists at producing air conditioning in a plant in a centralized fashion, and then you distribute it to a whole urban area. By doing this, you can provide air conditioning and cooling to homes, slashing the energy need by 30% and reducing the carbon footprint required to cool people by an equivalent amount. So it's extremely promising. But you rightfully pointed out that we also have challenges with legacy buildings. And there is a lot the government can do, putting in place new norms to promote energy efficient solutions. Now, whether these new norms enter into play, there is already a wide range of solutions you can implement to put automatism within buildings, to control the level of energy usage, to accompany our daily lives. Let me give you a few examples. You can very much imagine, for example, adjust the level of cooling in a building depending on the number of people that are inside. And that can drive a lot of efficiency. You can automate lights in an office so that when nobody uses a space, it's not lit, it's not consuming energy, and so forth and so on. And last, I think there is a usage shift that needs to happen. And as people are getting aware about climate change and its consequences, I think we're getting there. And we're probably going to move in the world where we're going to accept to live in cool buildings at 22, 24 degrees instead of today trying to go at very low temperatures at 18 degrees and being very, very comfy.
And Thomas, you talked about the government, but we also know that there's the government aspect of that and also the developers aspect of pushing smart cities and integrated cities to achieve its sustainability goals. What else can they do to push that towards climate action?
Well, so as I mentioned a bit earlier, the solutions are there, whether it is to to produce green energy or to consume less energy. I think we have a fair bit of technical solutions that can be used and deployed to make a difference. Now, we are all engaged into a race against climate change. We're really about trying to get on the trajectory of reducing our energy usage as fast as possible to maintain a livable environment for our kids and for people who will come after us. And in order to win that race, I think the most important is about finding ways to scale the solutions I just mentioned and that can make an impact today. And in the aftermath of COVID, I think we have a fair opportunity. You know, a number of plans are being designed at state level. Private sector is also channeling a lot of investment to go towards an economic recovery. And by using this investment smartly and channeling them towards sustainable infrastructure, I think we can do wonder. We can help fight the COVID effect in terms of economic stimulus, and at the same time address the challenges around climate change. And I will conclude with that. I strongly believe that the way forward will ask from us to do business a bit differently, finding ways to partners. And you were mentioning developers. This is a very good example. ENGIE, for example, which is at its heart a sustainable energy solution provider, is partnering with developers to scale solutions. We're doing it with Sunway, for example, in Malaysia, a very well-known and prime developer in the country, to mass deploy district cooling solution across the country, and that can make a big difference.
Mm-hmm. And Thomas, you mentioned about COVID-19 when designing cities of the future. How can developers and also the government take that into consideration? Disease outbreaks, population growth, and the quality of life. Because you mentioned at the beginning of the interview that 2/3 of the population will eventually move to cities. This will surely create crowding perhaps reducing the quality of life that people seek when they move to cities. Tell us about designing cities of the future.
Yes. So there are a few matters at hand, but you're absolutely right. The fact that the cities are getting more dense, more crowded, could lead to a series of issues and impact our daily life if we continue business as usual. So let me take first maybe the how to manage COVID with a denser urban area with more people interacting on a daily basis. It's true that controlling a disease outbreak for very contagious viruses like COVID-19 can be a challenge, but there are a wide range, again, of technical solutions that are available that can help control this type of disease. I think about a controlled temperature system, for example, or about air quality control technologies that we can put in the buildings to make sure the air is as clean as possible and prevent the disease to spread as fast as it could. So, again, by technology, and this is not science fiction, those technologies are available today, you can prevent the negative adverse effect of having a denser living environment. When it comes to lifestyle, enjoying the city of tomorrow, I'm going back to the circular concept that I was referring a bit earlier. When you design a city well enough, using technologies such as district cooling, promoting a sober use of resources, it translates into a strong improvement of our daily life. Think about it. With a city that is well planned, well cooled, for example. You can imagine spending more time outdoor in a not so warm environment. That will be extremely important as climate change effects start to unfold. That can be ensured through efficient design. You can imagine as well having a lesser usage of car and transportation system, because what you are doing on your daily life is accessible nearby, and so you have more of a local lifestyle that will be put in place. And if things again are designed quite nicely, you will really enjoy living in such a city of tomorrow.
And Thomas, let's look at the technical part slightly. Yeah, you mentioned about this district cooling facilities, right? Will that be energy efficient? And in terms of the cost, you know, would that perhaps add additional costs to developers, to the local council, governments, when they design new developments, taking into consideration the district cooling facilities?
Yeah, that's a great question. And of course, that's something we address already today, each time we develop such technology. So the great news is that as a district cooling comes with a lesser level of energy consumption, with an improved efficiency, it translates into a cheaper cost of chilled water or air conditioning, if you wish. So not only by using this type of solutions, you are doing good for the environment, but also you are promoting a healthy business model, which is great for the developers that will invest in it. Those type of infrastructure are long lasting. They're extremely resilient. They can take you for a 30, 40, 50 year journey, you know, and you can improve them along the way so that as new technologies unfold, your efficiency to deliver chilled water gets better and better. And again, it's not science fiction. It's already a technology that is quite well developed in Malaysia. Today, we're operating a large district cooling, for example, in Cyberjaya with the developer of the area, CyberView. It works fantastically. We're delivering air conditioning with unparalleled availability and efficiency to malls, offices, data center, and that makes the district quite sustainable and quite resilient in terms of usage of chilled water.
And Thomas, let's look at what it takes to move the needle when it comes to fighting climate change and bringing renewable energy. How can companies like ENGIE also contribute to that? And you know, we talk about how the government is or governments around the world are coming up with policies to reduce carbon emission. But what about companies like ENGIE and other companies out there? What else can they do?
Yeah, so far we talked a lot about energy usage and how to reduce it. But you're absolutely right. Making our energy mix greener is the other part of the equation, and we're working a lot on that. Let me start with a great piece of news. The energy coming from the sun is already the cheapest. It's the cheapest of all energy you can find, particularly in Malaysia. So there is no reason to deprive yourself as an industry player or as a city from tapping on this abundant resource, that is the sun, to power our usage now. So this is very promising, and this is a trend that's keeping on going year after year. Renewable energy is getting more efficient. It's true for solar, it's true for wind as well. So as a sustainable solution provider, ENGIE is obviously extremely active in that field. In fact, in Malaysia, we are currently deploying a 100 megawatt solar farm in Kerian. It's a very, very big project, very promising, that will help cut almost 200,000 tons of CO2 per year once it's commissioned next year. So We're already bringing this technology to the market in Malaysia. We want to do more. We're trying to help all the industrial players across the country understand that it's today you can already make a good economic choice and a good sustainable choice by putting rooftop solar on your facility. It makes a lot of sense. And it's a no-brainer almost. So we're really promoting that type of solution very actively.
And there's also that gap, right? I guess from achieving the ideal and between that and what it is right now. So what does it take to close that gap? Is it education? Is it awareness? Is it government policies? What do you believe can close that gap and get more industry players to take up renewable energy or sustainable energy sources?
So yeah, it's right. There is a gap. Obviously, the first step is awareness. Everything starts with awareness. And we have sufficient, I believe, information and proof to convince a lot of industry players, cities, states to jump into their energy transition and deploy at scale renewable energy on the one hand, and on another hand, all the solutions that can reduce our energy usage. So that's very encouraging, but it won't be enough. We need to go further if we want to become what we call carbon neutral, and which will be necessary if we want to fight climate change. In order to reach that, there will still be a requirement in terms of technology improvement that will have to come along the way. But the great news is that it's coming, and the technologies that will allow us to go fully carbon neutral should emerge and become completely economically viable within a 5 to 10 year timeframe. Let me give you a few examples. It all comes down from the fact that renewable energy is not available 24/7. You don't have sun all the time. You don't have wind everywhere or all the time. And that's a challenge. So in complement of this, you need storage solution or power sources that will work when there is no sun or when there is no wind. Malaysia is very well equipped to do that with its gas infrastructure, with its gas system. It can very easily and quickly complement the production of energy when there is no abundance of renewable sources. So that's a first starting point, which is great. What can happen then in a 5-10 year time frame is to make the gas we are using a greener or cleaner. Gas can be replaced by biomethane, which is green in essence, or hydrogen, even thinking a bit more forward. And that can lead towards a fully green energy mix, which is very, very exciting. Another aspect which is ongoing, and it's really a macro trend, with the deployment of electric vehicle across the world, you are reaching a scale of production that makes battery storage very cheap, and it's going to continue that way. It's going to get cheaper and cheaper to store energy. And there again, when you have a complementarity between energy production and cheap storage, you can think about having a fully green energy mix. And you can even imagine in the city of tomorrow some very promising business model. For example, with all our cars connected to the grid to charge, you could imagine that those cars are used like giant batteries, harnessing the energy of the sun when there is abundance of it, so to charge the cars. And then when it's nighttime, the cars could unload their energy to provide cooling or electricity to the homes when people are relaxing after a hard day of work.
So the ecosystem, the entire circular economy that you spoke earlier, it's not science fiction. It can happen.
It's already happening. So my key message today is that we have to pace and accelerate the deployment of available solutions within our cities through new innovative partnership, And the government can help by putting some norms in place to promote the deployment of such solutions. They are not more expensive, so there is already quite a fair rationale for the market to take up on those solutions. And the other part of my message is that tomorrow looks equally promising because the technologies are coming very strongly and they're becoming cheaper. And we have a good prospect to implement a more sustainable world and more sustainable cities for tomorrow.
On that note, we thank you very much, Thomas, for joining us.
Much welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.